You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio on the eve of UFC 68. Mr. Brendan Lear, how are you doing today?
I'm well, Kelsey. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks, of course.
I'm actually not well at all.
Why, you're sick?
No.
Why, what's
because,
the problem?
Because, you know, I wasn't on the last show, and who am I supposed to talk about Pride with? My dog?
Well?
So, like, the most exciting MMA event of the year, and I know what to talk about.
Well, dude, we had some stuff fall through today for the show, so you can rant on about Pride at the end of the show, man. You have everybody's attention now. Does that make you feel better?
It's kind of a little late now. Anyway.
Yeah, we've got Pete Sell coming on the program. Like I mentioned, a couple other things fell through, but thankfully we still got a hold of Pete, and he'll be coming on the program to talk to us about his upcoming fight at UFC 69, talk a little bit about his experiences at The Ultimate Fighter, and his memorable loss to Scott Smith, which we asked him a few questions about that. So Pete will be on the program. And yeah, Brendan, at the end we can discuss UFC 68, which is going off tomorrow night, and that's going to be huge. I'm really excited to watch. Or we can discuss Pride or quickly gloss over Pride once again. I'm sure your legions of fans would like to hear your thoughts on Pride.
Guess what I'm doing tomorrow night.
What are you doing tomorrow night?
My wife is having a dinner party.
Sweet.
Which she's apparently told me about probably like a month ago, and said, I'm having a dinner party on March the whatever. I said, probably absentmindedly staring at something else. Oh, sure, okay. She says she said that. I don't recall the conversation, but...
Well...
And that's it. I'm done.
You can retire to the veranda with cigars and brandy.
No, the lads are forbidden to come over. None are allowed to show up, and that's it.
Well, I've been around some of your friends. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
I know, but I'm to sit in the same spot for 3 hours and politely chit-chat. Well, God knows what's going down.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of TVO or the replay broadcast, etc. You're just going to have to do it again, buddy.
I imagine somehow it will be ruined for me.
No, you just have to stay off. Just when she goes to bed later that night, just stay up and watch the replay or something.
This happened to me only once before, and I was... very careful to stay off the internet, and lo and behold, that was like the day that some cheeseball sports network decided to put the UFC ticker on the bottom, and I was flipping by and I saw so-and-so beat so-and-so, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
ruined.
Times, they are changing. You pretty much have to seclude yourself from all types of media.
I know.
Nowadays, which is, I guess, a good thing, but...
I know. There's actually a really cool movie made about the 1989 Saskatchewan Rough Rider Grey Cup victory, and a guy who had to work, and it was a short film about him trying to get from his work to home without actually hearing anything about the game. Pretty good.
See, you've probably lost about, I'd say, 70% of the Canadian audience and 99% of the American audience now with that story. But
did three people actually break down that way?
Touche. On that note, we should go out on that high note. Stay tuned for Pete Sell. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight... that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the Full Contact Fighter Shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter. The undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Full Contact Fighter.
The undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans. You listen to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio is Mr. Pete Drago Cell. How you doing today, Pete?
Hey, what's up, buddy? How's everything?
I can't complain. How's the training coming along? Of course, you're taking on Talis Latis coming up at UFC 69, April 7th. And how's the training coming along?
Training's going good, man. I'm having a good time, you know. Actually feeling better than ever, you know. I've been able to kick in a lot, so I'm getting like my Thai boxing down a lot better, which I, you know, should get early on in my career, but I've been stretching a lot, getting more flexible, so especially when I see some head kicks and whatnot. You know, I'm definitely up on my game a lot, all different levels, and my takedown defense now, like ever since the little fight, is on a different level, so
and I wanted to ask you your thoughts on Liatis' last fight against Martin Kapman. He lost that by decision. What was your assessment of Talis in that fight, Pete?
I think Dally's definitely a tough guy. He definitely, you know, he took a lot of shots. He took his beating, and the only thing I see, the one time he hit him with the open hand right, I think he dropped Martin. That was like one of his highlights of the fight. He kept shooting well, and I think he got tired after like maybe the first round. I think the second or third round he was kind of tired. So I feel like if I step the takedown off, and I think he's gonna get tired and crapped out, and I think I probably have more power than the guy Kapman.
Pete, you look forward to going. You envision this fight going longer than the first round. How do you envision it panning out in your mind's eye right now?
I see it's coming out whatever the guy is, touch gloves, whatever, and we square off, and you know I could see him trying to punch to the clinch, try to take me down, get me against the cage, because you probably watch a little fight that he's gonna shoot a double on me, taking me down, and it's not gonna happen. And just basically punch a little by little, eventually he's gonna get tired of doing that, maybe I'll catch him with an uppercut with me on the way in, and once I slow down a little bit more with that, then I'll continue to knock him out.
Now, you mentioned, you know, you obviously want to keep the fight standing, it sounds like. Talis has got a well-accomplished jiu-jitsu background, and so do you, Pete. Any concern at all if he does get you to the ground? You feel like you can hang with him on the mat?
Honestly, like people like say, like, I heard other people gassing this guy up, saying he's sleeping on the ground, this and that. I mean, man, I've trained with some of the best, I rode with some of the best in tournaments, I've been with some of the best guys on the ground. I know where that game is and where my level is on the ground. You know, even Luda, I mean, is this guy going to be better than Luda on the floor? I doubt it. There's no way, you know what I'm saying? I think Luda killed this guy in a jiu-jitsu match, you know? So I don't think he's on his level, so I'm not worried about it at all.
Pete, have you been working on your Gogo Plata? I hear that's all the new fashion now in MMA.
I tell you, Nick Diaz, man, that was awesome, man. Good for him, man. But the great jiu-jitsu, man. Yeah, he's the first person to actually catch it on somebody, and I think it's awesome, man. It's funny that mixed martial arts, I think, goes through stages. Like, there's a part where like all the wrestlers do good, and then the part where the strikers do good, it's becoming back around because everybody got their striking and wrestling so good. Now it's becoming. His jiu-jitsu is becoming the factor that changes the fight. It's weird, you know. It goes up and down. It goes through cycles.
Yeah. Do you
see BJJ as making a big resurgence now as being the tipping point on the ground?
BJJ is where it's at on the ground. It always will be, like people say, submission fighting or whatever they want to call it. At the end of the day, it's Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I don't care what people say. That's what it is. That's what it's all about. The greats are the ones that brought it over here to America, and they started the whole thing, and that's where it's at. Whether or not you get a wrestler that learns how to gather some puts together those holds and whatnot, you know? So at the end of the day, it's all Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Pete, I wanted to ask you about your last fight and how you your mindset after that fight. It's I'm guessing it must have been disappointing for you. You hung in there against Scott Smith, hit him with that great body shot, and then of course the memorable highlight reel. How did you come back from that fight, that loss, Pete? Was it frustrating for you to be so close to victory and then have it snatched away like that? Or
it's kind of like a weird thing because I feel like I got more fans from fights sometimes that I lost, like even my little fight, because I just took the beating I took and just like sometimes fights I lose, I get more credits than fights I won. Like people like don't even talk about some of the other fights. It's crazy, you know. Like everybody loves the Baloney fight, but it's like, you know, sometimes people just love fights that you show your heart in and exciting fights more than even fights you win, you know. And you know, it's like I felt like I got into my rhythm in the second round of the fight. If you guys watched the second round of the Scott Smith fight, he maybe hit me once or twice, literally the whole round. I was on my way, just the body shot came first, but you know, I was on my way to hit him with something, you know. So either way, if you guys watch that fight, he hit me with like a Buddha and like being in the round. Other than that, maybe he hit me like one kick or something. He didn't really hit me the whole round. Yeah. I got into my rhythm and he was missing everything. You know what I'm saying? I just kept coming at him. And then eventually I hit him with the body shot, which, you know, then everybody knows what happened after that. I ran him like a retard, but what are you gonna do? I smelled blood and I tell you, the uppercut I was gonna hit him with, man, I wanted to knock his head over the fence, but yeah, he landed his right hand first. I didn't even know what happened. I'm like, motherfucker, you know, what are you gonna do? Excuse me.
Well, we had Patrick Cote on the show, and I want to ask your opinion on this. Did you see Pat Cote's fight with Scott Smith?
Yeah, I thought Cote definitely fought a smart fight, you know. What are you gonna do? I mean, the Scott Smith hits hard and he put a smart game plan, and I think the guy had him. And from a technical standpoint, you look at the way he fought the fight, it was awesome. But then for the fans, sometimes it's not as awesome. They want to see exciting fights, and I feel like the reason, he got more booed because after the fight that Scott just came off of, he had kind of like tough shoes to fill. You know what I'm saying? It's not exactly like how it was. It's like, boom, one guy gets hit, the other guy gets knocked out. Like it's, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like hard to updo that one, you know? So
I wanted to ask you because Pat Cote, he said on the show he's undergone some criticism for not trying to finish Scott. There was one point where he seemed to rock Scott, and Pat said that he didn't really believe, that he wasn't sure that Scott was as hurt as he sort of made it to appear. What were your thoughts on that when you saw that right hook land to Scott? Did you think he might be playing possum?
I think Scott was rocked, man. But yeah. Now it's almost like Scott has a little like an aura around him that, you know, if you hurt the guy, you don't know.
Yeah.
Just for the fact that he pulled the thing off on me, like you just don't know, because I don't know. From my point of view, I seen the guy looking at the floor. The guy was bent over looking at the floor. I'm like, there's no way this guy's gonna punch him. There's no way. I'm just gonna go after him and throw a bomb, you know?
Yeah.
And then like he just came out of nowhere and it made it worse because I ran into him. So I was from a running start, and I ran into a red hand, like, oh, man, like, I watched a replay, I couldn't believe it. I was like, man, if I just went, but always in hindsight, it's like anybody else that was in my position probably would have done the same thing. Mm-hmm. Would have Cote, rocked Scott, Cote and Scott fought before I did. Let's say he rocked him, you think he's going to go after that kill? He's definitely going after the kill. But the fact that Scott made his point and what he did to me, you have to respect the guy when you hurt him, because you don't know. And they always even say, even in other sports like boxing and stuff, they say when you have a guy hurt, that's sometimes when he's the most dangerous, because he's gonna swing wild. That's his only last shot. He knows he's hurt. He knows he's out of the fight. And it's, I mean, if you even look at boxing rules, for example, I mean, I was literally up in like, I don't know, like 3 to 5 seconds. I was standing up, walking around, fine. Scott was on the ground for like a minute or two on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they chopped it up because of preliminary fight, so it wasn't live for the TV. But when you guys see him on TV, they like chopped it and showed him on the ground and stuff. But he was literally on the ground for like a minute or two. He was down there for a while, like pushing the corner off, and you don't want to touch him. And you know what I'm saying? The boxing rules is this same eight count. It's like who gets up first. Almost like the thing with Matt Hughes and Carl Newton.
Yeah.
When they both knocked each other out, Matt Hughes got up and Newton didn't. You know, so Matt Hughes won the fight, you know. So I don't, you know what I'm saying? It's all like, so what? You know, so what? He hit me with a punch. I was a couple creeps. It was almost like a first knockdown. I was like, wasn't out. Even when I got dropped ever in my career, it was like a quick, like, I never been like knocked out. Like, after like, boom, it was like a first knockdown, maybe out for like a second or two, boom, I'm up. You know, it was never ever in sparring, nothing. I mean, that never really happened to me. Maybe like one or two in sparring. It was never, I know I have a tough chin, you know what I'm saying? I can take a punch, you know. I just sometimes you don't see him coming or whatever, and that's, you know, that's the name of the game. It happens.
Mm-hmm. Pete, I wanted to ask you, in the last year, you've been on, of course, been on the reality show and had this huge, huge fight that everyone's going to remember. How has that changed your day-to-day life as a sort of Jersey guy walking around on the streets?
A New York guy?
Yeah, New York guy, sorry.
Yeah, New York guy, yeah, no, I'm a Jersey. No, you know what? It's cool, man. I'm actually brought on my own horizons, I want to, work on my speech and talking and everything. I've been taking, acting classes because one of my friends manages an acting studio, and I'm trying to break it out to all different teams, and, you know, I love the fighter. I'm never going to stop fighting because that's like a rush that you can't get rid of, you know. I love that feeling, that glory, that I can never stop doing that. I'll probably be one of those old guys that goes, John, I think it's time to stop fighting, you know.
What do you mean you're taking classes? Are you trying to learn how to do a New York accent?
Yeah, basically. You know what's funny? I got a lot of jokes that I needed because I was one of the only guys on the show that they put, what are they, caption, you know what I'm saying? You know what they call that? The caption on the show?
Yeah, I had
a lot of crap for that, you know, so. I'm working on, you know, been coming from all my friends, the way I grew up around, talking, you know, that street talk and everything. I've been blowing my rise on that, and the acting really has put out of me a lot too, just practicing different scenarios and stuff, and yeah, and it's so funny, the acting's almost like the fighter in a way, you know, it doesn't have the dangerous factor, but it's all about being in the moment and blocking everything else out and interacting with somebody. So it's kind of like you go out to a fight, you block out the cameras, the crowd, everything, boom, you're in the cage now, you're fighting, you're in that moment, and the acting looks like the same thing. You block out the cameras, whether you're doing it in front of the theater or a camera, whatever it is, you block everything outside, you're acting that scene, and you act like nobody else is there, you're really in that moment. I'm all about that. I feel like I already done it on such a high level with the fighting that I know I could do that, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm looking at some of these guys, I'm like, they could do that, they're making all this money doing that, like, why can't I do that, you know?
So there's this famous old story, Pete, where Bruce Springsteen was on the cover of Time and Newsweek in the 70s when he broke it big, and he went to Graceland in Memphis and tried to jump over the wall and show Elvis that he finally made it. So now that Elvis is dead, you know, who do you want to go show now that you've made it? So now that you're a famous fighter and you've got a lot of celebrity, whoever in your life, yeah.
Well, the thing is with me is that I've seen, growing up, I've seen a lot of death around me. I knew a few kids I know that got shot, whatever. I knew, one of my best friends got a bad car accident. You know, he was in a coma for 3.5 weeks, and, he's, kind of retarded now. He'll never be the same, a little slow. And he had total amnesia. Mother friend insane. Finally, he's 27. He kept getting pneumonia because his esophagus exploded. He choked on a piece of steak. He's a bodybuilder, and he's in a coma for a year. And then when he recovered in the hospital, he kept getting pneumonia. Eventually, he crapped out. You know, so just like things like that. You know, I love to do it for you know, my own friends, like my people that are around me that are around me that were with me when I was nobody. You know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry now, everybody wants to be your friend, everybody's like, you're in a spotlight, everybody wants to be down or whatever, but you know, so you have to be true to the people that you were true to you when you were nobody, you know?
Yeah. Well, Pete, I want to ask you, when we're on the topic of friends, your close friend, mentor, Matt Serra's taking on George St. Pierre the same night that you're fighting Talis Laitis. What are your thoughts on that fight, Pete? What does Matt have to do to beat the current welterweight champ?
To be honest with you, Matt just got to beat himself, man. I think it's honestly hysterical. We laugh at all the stuff that's on the internet. People have Matt in a body bag and Matt Sarah in a body bag. We think it's hysterical. Like, we laugh at all these guys because just because, like, all these people are saying that George Saint Pierre didn't kill Matt doesn't mean we think that at all. You know,
yeah.
Like I remember when I was fighting Baloney, I was like 5-1 underdog. They were like, nobody gave me a shot in the world. Like everybody, and we shoveled up everybody's ass there, didn't we? You know,
yeah.
And I just think everybody. I'm all about that. I think he could not be in a better position because he's such the underdog that he ain't got nothing to lose. That's like the best. I mean, but I think it's worse if you're the head guy, like let's say the top guy in the sport, say like one guy like Chuck Liddell fighting a guy that's really not that good, maybe at a few fights. And let's say that guy beats him. I mean, that's a lot of pressure. You have to beat that guy, you know? Like, just for George St. Pierre, now all the pressure's on him because he has to beat Matt Taylor. If he don't, he's going to, for him, he's going to look bad because everybody's expecting him to win.
Yeah.
So now, all that pressure is on Pierre. And Matt's going to go out there. So we've been working a lot of new stuff and working on the wrestling and whatnot. We've just, man, and he has a lot more challenges on the way. He has a lot more tricks than people think he does, and you know, and styles make fights. You know, just because certain other guys gonna beat Pierre doesn't mean that can't.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, Pete, there's rumors abound that if Baroni wins his next fight, he's coming back into the UFC. Now, he whipped his ass once, and he still has the audacity to call himself a New York badass. So maybe if you rematch him, it can be you know, for the title of New York badass.
I've been asked about that. I mean, this is probably the, I don't even know what time I've been asked about, like, everybody's asking, you want to rematch Lonnie Reyes Boney? I told, Joe Stone, I told, the guys when I auditioned for the show, I told so many times, I was like, whatever you guys want, like, you know what I'm saying? It's all about, you know, we set it up, we can make a big fight out of it, I can get paid, and I'm with it. You know what I'm saying? I don't care. I'm with that. You know what I'm saying? I think I'm a different fighter now, and I think it'll be a lot worse fight for him this time. You know, I'm on a different level now. That's when I was making my jump into the big show, and I have so many more tools now, and I'm such a smarter fighter now with everything, and I would definitely do it. You know.
Well, let me ask you about that. What are your thoughts on his upcoming fight against Shamrock? Who are you going to pick between Baroni and Frank Shamrock?
I mean, of course I want Baroni to do this. I mean, keep knocking it back, bro. He's making me look good, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if Baroni went over to Pride and was killing all the, losing to everybody, I would look like shit. Like, oh, Baroni's on his way out. The fact he went over there, he knocked out 3 jabs, lost some decisions, and then he just tapped the Japanese folk box. What's his name? And, like, he's making me look. So the more fights he wins, the better he makes me look. So I like it, you know?
Yeah.
Keep knocking on Baroni, you know?
And any thoughts on you coming from...
The interesting question is, what are the odds that fight's actually going to happen?
Yeah, I don't know. You know what it is? I don't know the whole internet thing going on there, but I heard there's a lot of... Like, I heard that Shamrock saying that Baroni backed out, and the Baroni saying that Shamrock backed out, or something like that. I don't really know the whole story, so I don't want to... I don't know. There's always hype. There's always haters. Always people starting drama. You don't know what it's all about. You know, you just don't know.
That's the interesting thing for me about the St. Pierre Matt Sarah fight is that it's just a real legitimate fight. It's a clean fight. The guys actually respect one another. There's no shit stirring around, in the air. No rumors or gossip. It's just going to be a real good hard nosed fight. And that's actually something refreshing to look forward to.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of times that's how it should be because they're like getting personal and talking shit about people. Like I just think it's not. So what does it prove? That proves you any tougher? Like. Somebody talk crap to the champ, and then he gets his butt kicked, you know, it's not gonna, you know, and what, now you look more of an idiot. I don't know, I think it's, the only way I really talk crap about people if they talk about crap about me first. That's how I roll, you know.
Well,
I don't think there's no place for it, you know.
I think a lot of the speculation as far as the Frank Shamrock Baroni fight is due to the fact that Elite XC probably wants to get the Frank Shamrock Hensel Gracie fight underway immediately. And let me ask you about that, Pete. You come from the Hensel Gracie lineage of Jiu-Jitsu. Your thoughts on the fight between Hensel and Frank?
I feel like whatever happened in the fight, regardless, but I definitely sure might sound like a complete idiot on the definitely announcing whatever after the fight. Like, oh, I think it should have been stopped, or whatever, he wants to walk out, whatever the hell he said. He sounded like an idiot. He was talking about, oh yeah, I started with the old school rules. Oh yeah, you started with old school rules? Why? So go old school rules? Alright, there's no time limits. There's no 15 second stand up. Okay, then what? Imagine there was no stand-ups in the fight. Then what? If he was down to begin the round, we had to win the fight. Imagine there was no rounds. So he's talking about there being, well, I thought it was old school rules. I need back in the head. Oh, so you want to play with those new rules, but you don't want to play with the other old schools. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So he sounds like an idiot when he talks. Like, you're saying one thing, you're not saying the other. You know, like, I mean, all right, so there's no time limit. We're going to fight for a half hour straight, and Hensel takes you down. When he gets his commission, he gets his commission. You're not going to just hold on, and the ref's going to wait for the ref to take you up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Nobody's going to save you, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, for me, it's like, all right, there's nothing really to say, because the guy did it to himself. He killed himself by what he said, you know?
Mm. Hensel doesn't strike me as the type of guy that would have any apprehension about fighting Frank Shamrock under any rules, old school or back alley in Rio de Janeiro or wherever.
I tell you, man, Hensel's tough, man. There's like, there's something wrong with his head, or there's no way Hensel's making an excuse to get out of a fight. Because it's just like, Hensel's definitely a tough street type of guy. He's definitely not just making excuses to get out of a fight. That's just not him. You know what I'm saying? Like, if anybody that knows him knows that too. The guy's tough. The guy's fought the who's who of the sport. He's fought, so many different guys, you know, so, and he's been around for how many years, like, what is he, in his 40s now? I mean, it's, you know, what can he say? I mean, he's proved himself. Hensel doesn't have to fight no more, and the fact that he still has the balls to get in there at 8G and still show what he got. He's had no pitcher, he's in there fighting Frank Shamrock, he doesn't have to do that. When Hensel has an accomplished career, he had schools, he doesn't have to do that. The guy has the balls to still get in there, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, you know, if he in the best shape like he was when he was younger, no. If he had, like, it's a different one. He's fighting these younger guys or whatever, and guys that are trained on new stuff, and he's still in there doing his thing, you know? So I give the guy credit.
Most guys who are in their 40s are just happy if they can take their shirt off in front of their friends.
That's what I'm saying. Look at that. Hensel's in there. I don't even know what, I forgot the weight was for the fight, but I remember him weighing like something under the weight, wasn't it? Like, it wasn't like, 180, 181 or whatever, 182. Like, he was probably like, in, like, you know, eating whatever he wants at that weight, and Shamrock's body's cutting down to that weight, you know? Like, trying to make 185, and he was under it, you know what I'm saying? So he's in there fighting a guy that's basically bigger than him, a guy that's a better strike, and then still bringing it to him, taking him down, and I thought Hensel was going to make it out of the first round. He was just kill him. He was just knock him out. What happened? You know, but if you're that good, just stop Hensel from taking me down, then, if you're that good. And then another way, he sounded like an idiot. He was like, all right, well, I didn't come here to wrestle. Well, all right, the only difference between K-1 and something like that and, like, a stand-up type of fight and mixed martial arts is the takedowns. You think the takedowns is just a stand-up fight. The reason Chuck Liddell is so good at what he does is because nobody can take him down. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, he's a striker, and he's good at what he does, but the reason what makes that good is because you can stop him and take him down. So you can't neglect that part of the sport. That's a huge part of it.
Yeah. Well,
I'll
be curious to see what ends up happening, and I know I'd love to see the rematch between those two. And, Pete, we're looking forward to seeing your fight against Talos Lytus at the upcoming UFC April 7th. Pete, thanks a lot for coming on the show, and best of luck at the UFC 69.
Good luck, Pete. Cool. Thanks, guys.
Live on the LA Forum, March 17th, 7:30 p.m., the International Fight League brings you four of the world's best mixed martial arts teams battling head-to-head. Brazilian legend Marco Ruas leads his Southern California Condors against Genya Suda's Tokyo Sabres. Plus, Frank Shamrock pits his San Jose Razor Claws against Buzz Rutten's LA Anacondas in a North-South rivalry. Get your tickets now at the Forum box office or Ticketmaster.com.
Best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
This is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and some interesting comments from Pete Drago Cell. And Brendan, I was this close into talking with Pete of doing my very famous Matt Serra impersonation, but I'm sure most of the listeners who remember it from before probably found it very annoying the first time around, so I spared both you and Pete from my Matt Serra impersonation. And I gotta apologize if some of that was hard to understand. It wasn't the greatest connection today. We've been kind of having some problems with my phone line all day today, and then you throw in Pete's very thick New York accent, and I think at times part of that interview was hard to understand, but I apologize to the listeners for the technical difficulties we're having today.
Well, I don't know, I don't know how we're going to send out the podcast and as well as subtitles at the same time. There must be a way, I just don't know exactly how that's done.
Yeah, maybe I'll just write up an accompanying transcript, and people can download the transcript. Well, Pete said himself, right, that there had to be captions during some of the Ultimate Fighter episodes, which I don't necessarily remember. I think it was only when he was drunk. I think there was one episode where he was drunk where there was captions. Is that how you remember it, too?
I can only remember it a couple of times. To be quite honest, it's remarkable how those how the reality shows fade into your memory, like, they're all completely confused for me now. Like, I can't remember who was on what season, like, who fought who. It's just completely, I guess that maybe is, I don't mean that in an insulting way, and that's a reflection on the show, but it's just, like, so much fluff that just disappears into the midst of memory.
I find, too, because a lot of those results aren't recorded under fighter records, that sometimes it makes it easier to forget certain things because you have to sort of really delve into the internet in order to unearth the Ultimate Fighter results during the actual season. And it's odd because I can't remember which season. It might be the second season. For some reason, that's included in some of the databases. I should ask our database guy, Mike. But, some of them are included, and then most of the other seasons are not. So, but anyways, Brendan, let's quickly talk about Pride. Let's just hear your thoughts. Wombat, I don't know if you heard his comments on Pride last weekend, and some of it was pretty funny, man. What are your thoughts? I don't know if you heard what he had to say about the Nick Diaz, Takanori Gomi fight, but he's basically saying that if there's a rematch that you're going to see, I don't know if you heard it, but did you hear his comments about what, you know, how much Gomi will have to be beaten down to a pulp before a Japanese referee or Pride official would jump in and stop that fight in a potential
That's typically the way it goes.
Yeah.
Isn't it? And how could I not listen? This is my favorite show, so how could I not listen to it?
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, the only problem with that Wombat guy is that, you know, you and I are very sort of dynamic and animated, and he really sort of brings the whole pace in the show down.
I agree.
He needs to really get more. He really needs to be more enthusiastic.
Yeah. And he has to quit, just being kind of a bit of a nut hugger with the fighters. He never really speaks his mind, whereas you and I are always really out front with our thoughts.
And he doesn't hardly say A at all.
No, he prefers dude. Yeah. He's more American than us, apparently. But
not as bad as bro, but still pretty bad.
What did you think of the fights before we move on to the UFC?
I was really pumped. Like, we had to watch them again. I had a party to go to, and we came back, and the hardcore fans, we started watching around midnight, but it was like 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. when I finally got to bed, but I was wide awake. I thought that was a phenomenal show. You know, it was just remarkable. I thought it was one of those shows, and I guess it was lucky for Pride, and I knew they had to, sort of make a mark, and I think that's what they did. So they made a good product that looked excellent. The fights were really exciting. Obviously, those upsets were just unbelievable. So, and the action was great. The only thing I didn't like about it was the production. I thought was a little bit sloppy. The sound, it sounds like they just mic'd up the stadium speakers for a lot of the intros and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. But let's get more into the specifics. You're the one who wanted to share your thoughts. Where does Pride go from here? Beforehand, I was kind of the one, I think, one of the few, but I have read a couple other writers who shared some of these sentiments about the fact that now you've probably lost a lot of luster and attraction with Wanderlei Silva, who was one of the more marketable Pride fighters. And I kind of feel that Pride's in an interesting predicament now, even though it appears that the UFC and then Pride were not at any point close to doing any sort of joint fight between Liddell or Silva, etc.
You know,
where do they go from here? I mean, you've got Takanori Gomi, one of their biggest stars, certainly losing some shine now, and now you've got Wanderlei Silva back-to-back KOs.
You know, I'm not really sure in terms of... I think what they had to do, they did what they had to do in America, and it's more or less irrelevant in America that Silva lost, because I don't think anyone knew who Silva was. You know, the 80% of the people in the States didn't follow Pride, and Pride had to have a good show. Pride had to have a good show to sort of pique people's interest if they watched it or if they're exposed to it. Gomi especially, I think, is irrelevant. His loss is irrelevant in North America because I don't think anyone knows who he is in North America except for, like, MMA aficionados, of course, like ourselves. In North America, he was, you know, ranked number one, as the number one lightweight in the world. And I think if anything, you know, they gained as much capital in seeing Mock Sakurai take apart Danzig than they did seeing Gomi lose, because that was such a spectacular fight. Like, who can, you know, even if as Gomi loses, it's one of those fights where none of the fighters have lost face. The only people who have lost face is Pride because of their stupid rule about title defenses and things like that.
Well,
so in terms of Wanderlei, I think again, you can't overestimate the hype built up in the MMA community around that. But the MMA community is not isn't putting dollars, I don't think, in the UFC's pockets. So it's the more recent fans. So I think, you know, I don't know. It happened. If they put that fight on, you think no one's going to buy the pay per view? Of course they will. So.
Yeah,
well, Dana White. I think Dana White has taken his opportunities to put in their shots now and saying, well, why would we want to do a fight like that? But then, I also read yesterday that Wanderlei Silva had a meeting with the UFC in the States. He's still in the States, so.
Really, I didn't read that. What I mean, as far as Gomi though, and you and I are actually, we have to re-vote on the FCF rankings after this weekend's show. But you look at someone like Gomi, and Dana White made some comments, I think it was on a New York radio show, in regards to Gomi, saying, like, well, look, you know, he lost to Diaz, a guy who had several losses in the UFC, which I think, you know, is not really reflective of Diaz's talent. He's obviously a great fighter, and so is Gomi, for that matter. But where does... I mean, if you're doing your rankings now, does this certainly probably, I think a lot of people would have trouble ranking Gomi as the best lightweight in the world now. He's got two losses now within a year or so.
I think, I think they would. You have to have problems ranking him as the number one because his number one ranking did survive his first loss to a relatively unknown fighter. And of course, no offense to Marcus Aurelius, but he was a relatively unknown fighter, although certainly not unqualified. But to say that now with two losses he can still hold on to that, you could argue that he's fighting out of his weight class, but it was in a catchweight, so both of them came in the same. You know, I didn't think he was the number one before, but I think Gomi has the potential to fight at the highest levels. but I don't think he's a fighter that has ever demonstrated that he can sustain that level of excellence. You know, he peaked. He had a phenomenal year, but you know, he didn't stay at that level, and who knows why that is.
Well, and I thought that, I mean, I know he got rocked several times by Diaz, but I thought also maybe his conditioning looked suspect. He looked very gassed near the end of the first round, going into the second.
He did, he did look really gassed, and he kind of looked exhausted, but then again, he had just been punched in the head 25 times, so I'm sure that played a lot into it, which is surprising, you know, because he would be used to fighting in Pride 10-minute rounds, and the fact that he would have gassed in a 5-minute round was somewhat surprising to me. So, you know, who knows what's going on. It was such an unusual fight to watch. I thought to myself the whole time, I just can't make sense of what I'm looking at, you know. Mm-hmm. It looks so unusual, the whole fight.
Well, it'll be really interesting to see what Pride does, and I think they almost have to give, to keep any sort of legitimacy to their lightweight championship, they have to give Diaz a rematch with a title shot, obviously.
Yeah, I think so. It's an unfortunate third rule, and it's a ridiculous rule. And I think they've taken so much criticism after that maybe they're going to have to change the way they think about those non-title fights. If you know, if they want the fight to be non-title, you know, put the title on the line and have some fights some can.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brendan, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back, and we'll discuss the UFC 68 tomorrow night.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
Tomorrow night, UFC 68 is going to take place, and there's several huge fights on that card that Brandon, you and I need to discuss. And I'm not really sure if anyone else shares those sentiments as far as having to listen to us discuss, but let's get into it. First off, just an overall thought on the card, Brendan. Are you pretty excited or not so much?
I think it's a decent undercard. I was, when they first made Sylvia Couture, I was kind of interested in the fight, and I think it still might be an interesting fight, but I think it's got the potential to be a real stinker, too. And, you know, I think the UFC, just in my own personal opinion, has had some. I haven't really been crazy about the headline fights as of late. I've been much more entertained by the undercard fights. So, again, this is one of those ones where if it's a good fight, it could be really good. But if it's a bad fight, God forbid it'd be another stinker, and we get robbed of seeing some decent undercard fights.
Well, let's start breaking down a few of the undercard bouts, and I think another notable undercard bout that I'm not sure if this is going to be televised, and it will be, I think, really unfortunate if it's not, or at least it would encourage people to probably watch it on demand if not, but is Luigi Fiorenti versus John Fitch. Brendan,
I encourage the UFC to give those fights away for free.
Yeah.
Because you pay for the pay-per-view. Sorry.
No, that was one thing that was nice about the Pride card. There's no question. You know, you get to see all the fights. But that aside, this matchup again, and I'm not, like I said, it's kind of funny. On the UFC website, it says may not be broadcast. And I did a piece this week for the website in regards to the middleweight contender spot. And I was more so talking about Nate Marquardt and Yushin Okami, about how these guys are somewhat in the title mix. In the middleweight division, a lot of UFC fans or people who just watch the pay-per-views, Brendan, not the hardcore fans, aren't probably terribly familiar with these guys, even though they're top five ranked in the division. And John Fitch, I think you can make exactly the same case. This guy is 17-2. He hasn't lost in the UFC. He's regarded by most as a top 10 welterweight in the world. I think FCF, our rankings, have got him 7th. And probably, Brendan, a lot of people don't even know who he is.
And I know, and his last fights have been fairly good looking fights, but I think, you know, when they eke out those last dark fights, they're picking something with a dramatic finish and not like a 3-round pound them out victory. So, you know, I think he suffered, and Marquardt suffered too. Marquardt was on, he's only been on TV once, right? And he's probably going to be fighting for a title shot. So, yeah, it's unfortunate, and I actually don't really understand it, you know? I don't really understand it very much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's get down to the specifics of this fight. Fioravanti as well, kind of a little bit of an unknown commodity. He's come back, dropped down from 185. He looks a lot better at that weight. It seems like it's, in my opinion, it's increased his punching power a lot. And he's definitely got some solid hands. He's been on the show, a great jiu-jitsu guy, American Top Team. Who do you pick in this fight, Brendan?
I'm not sure. I'm kind of torn in this fight, but it would be difficult to go against. It would be difficult to go against Fitch, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that you know, John Fitch went to start training with AKA to work on a stand up. He's got a very storied wrestling background, great collegiate accomplishments, high school accomplishments, I believe, in wrestling, and obviously in his MMA career, it's obvious that he's a great wrestler. So I predict that if he has some problems with Luigi standing, he'll probably test the waters there. But I think he'll probably take the fight to the mat and win it from there. So I'm going to go with Fitch as well.
Yeah, I think it's tough to pick against him now, and I think he's, you know, I think he's maybe the UFC's dark horse to vanquish anyone they're not happy with at the 170 champion at the 170 championship stage.
Jason Lambert versus Renato Sobral, and I'm pretty excited about this fight. And I think we talked about this briefly. Just to the fact that it's nice that the UFC has the amount of events that it does now, that we're starting to see guys like Sobral who have had a title shot. You know, you have the big UFC hype machine behind Sobral, pointing out some of his big victories. I mean, the guy has, he went on a crazy stretch there. He has a lot of notable victories. I think the only guy to beat Mauricio Shogun Rua. So it's nice to see that because the UFC is having more events, we get to see him fight again. And for that matter, fight against another top light heavyweight in Jason Lambert.
Yeah, Lambert really had, you know, he was really pumped up when he made the cut to 205, and you know, he had a tough loss against sort of what seems to be a sort of up and coming, almost unstoppable fighter. So this is going to be a nice fight, because I think they're both looking to regain some momentum. I think they'll both be hungry for a win, and it'll be interesting to see if Sobral can actually finish Lambert. You know, I think he's got to be the favorite coming in, but I think, you know, Lambert could give him all sorts of problems.
Yeah, I think it's going to depend on wrestling in this fight and whether or not Lambert, I mean, he might very well try to stand up with Renato and see where he's at from there. I think I'm going to go with Sobral in this fight. There's something, I think that his last fight against Chuck really didn't do justice to his true abilities, and I think that I think Lambert is going to give him a run for his money, but I think Sobral is going to get this win. I think he's probably going to submit him, and that's how I think Lambert will probably take this fight to the ground at some point, and I think I'm going to go with Sobral by submission.
I think I'm going to go with Sobral too, and I think before we make any more picks, I think you have to recognize and glorify my Pride picks from last Pride. Apart from that son of a bitch, Alistair Overeem, I think I was dead on, even with my upsets.
Really? I don't even remember now. I mean, I'm usually not paying attention.
So why do we even make picks anymore?
Yeah, I can't. I honestly...
Literally, you could have made millions of dollars off my picks last time.
Really? That's impressive. I don't think didn't we only disagree on maybe like one or two fights?
Yeah, you'd copied some of my upsets.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, apparently I went with Shogun, so I was right on that one. And maybe,
yeah.
I can't remember if I went with Gomi and Diaz. Anyways, see, there you go. All
I have to say is Alistair Overeem is dead to me. Anyway, let's get back on with the show.
Just that bitter because he ruined your predictions, huh?
I think I was perfect, except for him.
Well, such is life. Next fight, Rich Franklin versus Jason McDonald. This is a fight that there's a lot of interest behind this one. It's a great storyline. Jason McDonald, if he can make it three wins in a row, his first three UFC fights, a guy who's been kind of up and down in his career and turned things around as of late. It's a great storyline in that regard. And then you've got Rich Franklin, who's gunning for his belt to get it back again. There's a lot behind this fight, and I don't know. This one's going to be tough to pick. Brendan, who are you making? Who do you think's going to win?
I'm going to go with my homer pick, Jay McDonald, for the big upset.
Really?
I think he has now been completely dogged after his performance against Lieben. His stand-up has been completely and utterly dogged, and I think it's going to be a surprise to everyone.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that one. I'm going to go with Rich Franklin. I think that, you know, Jason's got a shot if he can take Rich down a few times and win the fight from the top position and maybe even get a submission. And definitely don't want to discredit anything Jason's done. It's been a remarkable run. But I think that Franklin, I think Franklin's gonna win this fight, and I think he'll probably be able to keep the fight standing or even from the clinch. I think he's got a good shot to stop Jason. But it's gonna be a competitive fight. I certainly wouldn't want to bet on it, but I think I'm gonna go with Franklin.
Yeah, I think Franklin's too much of a. If Franklin wasn't coming off the loss he was coming off of, and if I didn't think he was so as beat up as he is, I would rethink this fight, you know. But I think the question is, where is his head coming from? And this is really the first time in his career where he was, really beaten down. And he wasn't beaten down in the Loazo fight, but he was certainly came out of that fight banged up. And the last was just a violent beatdown. So I think we haven't seen him come back from anything like this. So I think that's enough of a what if for me to be able to go with McDonald, who's pretty solid, and you have to think has only gotten better after having been down with Jackson training for the last couple months.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chris Lytle versus Matt Hughes, this is another intriguing welterweight matchup, and certainly I think it's tough. It's got to be somewhat tough for Matt Hughes. There's so many people, especially down the States. I mean, this guy is such a huge star down there. It's got to be kind of tough for him not to look past Chris Lytle somewhat, which I think would be a dangerous thing for him to do. But there's just so much talk about GSP, and for that matter, George St. Pierre against Matt Serra, which, you know, Pete Sell alluded to earlier. So much pressure on both these guys, so much almost assumption that these guys are going to win their fights and there's going to be the rematch. It's got to be tough to stay in a good mental state of frame, you know, I would think, state of mind as far as competing.
Well, I think, you know, that's the problem. Hughes is Hughes is an enormously cocky, you know, bordering on arrogant fighter, and I think he probably thinks that he's going to walk. He's saying all the right things and saying, you know, I just want to concentrate on my next fight. But you got to think that in his head, he's thinking, I'm walking over this guy. Now, you know, some fighters need to be like that. You know, some fighters need to have that unquestioned confidence. But we'll see whether or not, you know, we'll see how far that gets him. And like I said, I've been criticized a lot for this, but I haven't been overly impressed with Hughes' performance over the last couple of years. I think there's other fighters who've been fighting far more difficult fights, and we'll see. You know, we'll see how he holds up. This could be, you know, this could be his swan song.
So what are you saying? Are you going to go with Lytle?
I'm going with I don't think I'm not too crazy about Lytle. This is the thing. I don't think Lytle's the guy to step in and take him out. Just because I think Lytle is susceptible to the takedown, I think he's got the punching power to do it. But why not? I'll go with Lytle.
Okay.
Jesse, you can't overthink these things.
Right.
You know,
right.
You have to get in the zone. You have to get in the zone and
go with your gut. Not the facts, not science.
You've got to channel your pick.
Yeah. Well, you're quite good at that.
You pick from the gut.
Right. I'm going to go with Hughes. I understand some of what you're saying. I think the main reason I'm going to go with Hughes is because Matt Serra defeated Chris Lytle from his ability to take Lytle down and from the clinch and take him down and sort of win the fight from the top position. And that's why I'm going to go with Hughes. And I think if, you know, Matt Hughes is a far better at takedowns than Matt Serra.
Oh, yeah. If you put it that way, it's tough to pick against Hughes.
Yeah. The only way I think Hughes loses this fight is if he does the same thing he kind of did against Gerard St. Pierre. And there's been a lot of people talking about, you know, he confides to lots of people within Miletic, etc., that he wants the big knockout, that he's worked on his hands, etc. I think if he tries to go that route with Lytle and tries to prove a point, which I think he did somewhat, at least in the initial stages against BJ Penn and George St. Pierre, I think he has a chance of getting caught by Lytle. He's a great, accomplished boxer. I mean, the guy's got quite a few professional boxing fights under his belt. If he goes that route, he could lose, but I don't think he will. I think he'll play it tough and smart, and I think he'll go for the big slams and the old Matt Hughes style of fighting, and I think he'll win via that route. So,
And do you think he's going to finish the fight, or is he going to win a decision?
I'm going to go with, I think he's going to finish it. I think he'll finish it maybe, you know, late second, third, early third round by cut.
By cut?
Mm-hmm. TKO, you know. I think he'll get some big shots in. Lytle doesn't get stopped easily. He's got a great chin. But I think I could see Lytle getting opened up by some elbows, and yeah, I'll go with cut. See, I don't just make picks. I don't just make, you know, one go with one guy or the other here, Brendan. I go with by cut or submission. I actually much more, I take more risks than you do at these picks.
Yeah, I appreciate that about you.
Yeah. Of course, the main event, and I think a lot of people are discussing this, and this fight for me almost kind of crept up on me a little bit. I don't know why. It's almost as if a lot of times when there's a big fight coming up, I sort of really look forward to it from weeks in advance and kind of think about it a lot. And this one, it's not that I'm not excited about it. I am. But it kind of just crept up. I don't know if that makes any sense. But here it is, Randy Couture versus Tim Sylvia. And I think there's a lot of, obviously, it's a great storyline surrounding this fight. Brendan, what do you think?
What do you mean it crept up on you?
I just mean,
have you been living in a cave?
I don't know what it is. Not so much that I wasn't aware of it. It just, I can't explain it. And now we're probably just boring the listeners to death. But it was kind of one of those fights that sort of dawned on me maybe 3-4 days ago. Oh yeah, this is this weekend. You know, awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. I didn't find myself thinking about it a great deal up until this week, and now here it is, and I'm really excited to watch. So I don't know if that makes any sense.
You know, the good thing about MMA is that it's gaining a lot of popularity, and you get a lot more access to the fighters, and you listen to them a little bit more. And the bad thing about MMA is that it's becoming a lot more popular, and you get a lot of access to the fighters, and you get to listen to them more. So how many times can you hear Randy Couture and Tim Sylvia do the same interview, and everything is exactly the same?
Yeah.
You know, same question. It's almost, you know, the worst for this, as Canadian listeners can appreciate, maybe they can't, but it's like listening to hockey interviews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you heard one, literally.
You've heard them all. Yeah.
You've heard them all.
Yeah.
So what are you going to think you did? Oh, you got to play better as a team.
Going to give
110%.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like that. Like, you know, once you heard Couture talk, you know, one time, do you literally have to listen to the next 10 interviews that are in the line? Because they're all exactly the same.
Unless sometimes it gets escalated, and I think this one did to a small degree. It seemed that the more interviews Couture did in questioning Sylvia's ability to win a fight in dramatic fashion, to defend his title, etc., and then he's playing it safe and conservative in his fights, it seemed like the more interviews Sylvia did, it seemed, you know, that he would get a little bit more animated and things would get a little bit more heated. But I do know what you're saying, and I think that's just unfortunately something that's just gonna happen as the sport gets bigger. But
now, that being said, Chuck Liddell does his supposedly his best interview ever this morning. I haven't seen
right.
the video, but
yes, NyQuil sedated
interview. I still the only one I like better than that. This was one that I read with Josh Koscheck called Diego a Cocksucker.
Yeah, I saw that on there. It was a New Mexico MMA website. Yeah.
That was pretty sweet. Now, if you're going to do interviews, make it worth my while reading, and that made it worth my while, because that is pretty hilarious.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into the fights. We're running out of time here. Couture versus Sylvia. How does this unfold, Brendan?
I think, like I said, I think it has the potential to be an interesting fight. I think Big Tim will be a little bit too much for Randy, and I think he's going to beat him up a little bit. And I think I see this stopped by TKO in the second from Tim Sylvia strikes.
Yeah, I really hate to go against Couture because he's proven people wrong so many times in the past. But I think that's the key word here is in the past. He's a great legend, and I'm really excited that he's back. Personally, I think I agree with you. I think Sylvia's going to probably stop him. But I hope that Couture keeps competing. I'm not really sure. Some of the questions that I've seen put forth to Sylvia, I agree with, you know, or some of his comments, the fact that Couture for a long time maintained that he couldn't compete against heavyweights, that the bigger guys are what were giving him some problems, that he should have always competed at 205, and he had some success there. And then all of a sudden, Sylvia is a champ, and Couture is unable to defeat Liddell at 205, and you know, he mentioned, I guess he had said that if Ortiz won, beat Liddell, that he might come back to 205, and that didn't happen. So now he's back at heavyweight, and I'm not really sure. You know, I guess Randy must see something in, a loophole, something in Sylvia's game that he thinks he can exploit. Personally, I don't really see that happening. I think he could get caught wading in. I think the deciding factor on this will be whether or not Randy Couture has the speed in his stand-up that he did against the first fight against Chuck Liddell. If he can duplicate that and sort of sidestep Sylvia, who's obviously probably slower than Chuck Liddell, and get to the clinch and get Sylvia down, sure, he's got a shot to win. But getting to that point and wading in, I think I can easily see a big right hand, you know, sending him to the mat. That's how I can easily see that happening.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think for me, Sylvia showed enough on the ground against Munson that, you know, Munson, of course, was shooting with long shots and didn't have any success with those whatsoever. But he did get Sylvia down a couple of times. I think he actually did he have side control once? I think he did. And anyway, Sylvia fought himself out of a couple of situations without any apparent anxiety, and showed enough competence on the ground to say that unless Couture gets him in a very precarious position, then for five rounds, Sylvia can. I think for five rounds, Sylvia can very easily avoid the takedown and get in enough shots to win the fight, period. So I don't see, you know, the way that, you know, the good thing about being a Greco-Roman wrestler compared to a freestyle wrestler is that if you have takedowns from the clinch, just like judo guys, you know, if you do a good takedown from the clinch, you usually end up in a dominant position, you know. Traditional freestyle wrestlers, if they get a good takedown, they usually end up in the guard. So I think that would be Couture's strength, whether or not he can transition that if he's effective at his takedowns into a victory is another question, you know, because he could get that once, twice, or three times even during the fight and still not win. So
it'll be intriguing to watch. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully there'll be something interesting about the fight to watch. That's my hope, because I think another brutal, five round boring fight would be it would be a shame. I think Sylvia. To Sylvia's credit, Couture is trying to goad him into this. You know, I think he's got to fight. He's got to have it in the back of his head that he can't fight another five round boring fight. You know, that criticism has been so persistent that's got to weigh into the way he thinks about fighting the fight. And I think Couture is totally goading him into that.
Yeah,
he's saying, "Come on, he's boring. You know, he's this, he's that." And the one, you know, if he could be goaded into making a big mistake, overextending himself, or something like that, then all the better for Couture being able to play him into that.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really good point, and I hadn't actually considered that. It's an excellent point that sort of a reckless and wading into him, Sylvia, is definitely going to be a guy who's going to be more easily to be taken down than someone who kind of more stands back and waits for Couture to wade in and uses effective counterpunching and reach against Couture. You're right. It'll be interesting to see. Well, on that note, Brendan, let's get out of here. Enjoy the fights tomorrow night, or whenever you end up watching, enjoy the dinner party. And kind of sucks to be you, dude.
Well, no offense, if I were an MMA journalist like you, I could say, sorry, baby. You know, when you married me, you married the job.
I got to work.
Shit like that.
Right.
But I... I'm just unfortunately
substituted. Yes, you are. Well, enjoy it, and we'll talk to you after the weekend.
See you later.